So, how are you doing over there?
I'm doing.
How was the ocean?
Huh?
It's the ocean.
Yeah.
It's a little sloppy to me.
Yeah. It's a little sloppy, but we're leaving after this, I think.
Oh, wow. They're so close together.
Oh, no. Yeah.
All right, Richard, you can start whenever you'd like.
Okay. We will call meeting to order. This is the regular commission meeting of the Port Brookings Harbor Commission, Wednesday, January 18,
2023. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Larry?
Here.
Ken?
Here.
Sharon?
Here.
Joe?
Here.
Richard?
Here. Are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda? We've got at least one new action item.
Yes. Action item D, McLennan Excavation Payment Request Number 5.
I have an additional information item regarding the Indian Memorial. So that would be information item F. Okay, any general?
Yeah.
All right, are there any declarations of potential conflict of interest?
No.
Nope.
All right, any motion to approve the agenda?
I make a motion to approve the agenda as written, plus add an action item D.
And information.
And an information item.
I didn't even see that. What is that?
So no, I just,
no, he
I
had
just
it.
Put it on.
And additional information.
Joe, F? It's just F. You don't have it.
I don't.
It's not sitting in your pile. We just have additional
okay.
information.
Okay, I just
F.
put it on. What else you need?
Indian Memorial Mansion.
What memorial?
Indian Memorial.
Sorry, guys.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. And now?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. That brings us to the approval of the meeting minutes from Wednesday, December 21st.
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. We have no public comments in front of me. Are you aware of any, Danielle?
I did not receive any.
Okay. That brings us to the management report.
All right. So the RV park project continues to move forward. Weather and holidays were a factor in progress in December. Contractors still will be completing sites 1 through 22 first before moving on to the north end of the park. Concrete blocks remain in place throughout the month. High tides and log debris continue to pile along the beach and sometimes up onto the walkways. Just for the public, remember to always use caution while walking the ocean path during storms. Occupancy for the RV park was at 6%, down 5% from last year, with an average occupancy for 2022 at 32.9%. In the marina, staff completed the second water test for the 1200Z water permit. All docks were walked before and after rain events. Staff is looking for broken ropes, cleats, water lines, or any vessels that appear to be below its water line or listing to either side. The port had multiple storm events that occurred. Staff is documenting the damages in the event that a disaster is declared, and we will work with EMC and decide how to use our mitigation program and other funding sources that may be available. During the minus tide, part of the dock between I and J dock hit bottom and pinched a piling hoop and caused the dock to bind. When the tide came up, it broke three sections of dock and temporarily made this section unpassable. Staff has temporarily fixed the dock and will need to make more repairs when weather will permit. Also material. Boat launches, there were 33 boat launches, brought the totals, I'm sorry, there's 93 boat launches, 33 up from last year. Total boat launches were 5,001 for the year of 2022. That's the most since we've been documenting them since 2019. Telehandler jobs, we did two, bringing the year in total to 53. Travel lift haul outs, we did seven, bringing that total to 76. Receiving docks are operational and no reports of anything broken or needing repaired. Commercial retail buildings, no changes to report of the boatyard warehouse structure. Staff found a beam that needs to be replaced by Tide One's leak area, which is right out here. It's not a structural beam, but we have the material on hand, and when the weather permits, we will replace that. Staff completed 82 work orders in the month of December. Total 2022 work orders were 1,100. Most of the December work was storm-related, checking boats, removing debris, and preparing for more upcoming weather events. Office staff was limited this month to mostly one person. We collected two applications for the office manager position and held interviews January 4th. We will be listing more office positions to help provide more support for our office staff. After these positions are filled, we will be focusing on training and keeping up with the day-to-day tasks. For boat inspections, ongoing inspections, I have one that's hauled out that is having Kenny look at doing the repairs and getting cost estimates, and then he will decide what he's going to do with the boat after that. Another one, the Thor on 013, he's also working with Kenny at the boat shop, and I gave him an additional 60 days to complete repairs, and we'll follow up for a reinspection on February 15th. Upcoming inspections will be the Taku, the Rumba, and then as a Dory, but yeah, I don't know that name. As I've been saying before, I'm trying to pick at least one or two boats that look like they need to be inspected and having them prove seaworthiness or make repairs or remove the vessel. Let me see here. We kind of added, I put all of the management reports together with the backup information on them. The forecast for the RV park is still very low percentage. The only things that we have currently open are the back-end sites. Multiple people have made pre-reservations to the RV park for the front row sites for when they do come open. So there's kind of some backlog, but I have them open starting for July 1st, so we can start getting more 4th of July revenue up. But before that, I still have them closed until I get a better date of when things are going to be completed. Safety and security report. The port recorded 5 incidents for the month of November, bringing the year total to 79. One flex line between D&E docks broke and the water was shut off. It's still shut off while we reroute that water line. Someone allowed their dog to dig holes in the grass at the kite field. Staff used 3 yards of dirt to fill the holes back in. We are watching our security cameras much closer, and the dog digging is going to stop. A vehicle did drive through the kite field grass, creating divots. Security footage was given to the Curry County Sheriff. Sewer alarm at the boat launch restaurant began going off. We had to limit Zola's and Pacific Ocean Harvester. City of Brookings and Harbor Sanitary came to assist clearing the line. And then we talked about the piling hoop tension between I and J Dock. 4-8 security recorded 12 security issues for the month of December, and monthly inspections were completed as required by our stormwater pollution control plan. Stormwater testing was completed during the recent storms. This was the 4 of 4 required tests for the year. And our tests are looking better. The only point we failed in the early December was in the boatyard for copper. Everything else passed and all the testing. And then the most recent one we did still had some, it was total suspended solids and copper again in the boatyard. But our tests are looking better, and due to high rain storm events, it's definitely cleaning up what there is, washing out, and our tests are actually looking pretty good right now. So,
I have a question, Travis.
Yes.
On the vehicle that was driving on the kite field, is that a local person or a visitor?
So with that, we turned it into the sheriff's department for what we had. They never got close enough for us to get a license plate or be able to identify who it was. It was just a type of vehicle, so we turned it in, and if they could ever match something up that fits that vehicle description, that's what we would have. But
that's it. Thank you.
So the financial report, you'll notice, is not as it normally is. I'm still trying to work through how to create what Kim created on that. So I attached the balance sheet, the purchases by each vendor. Vendor purchases were $167,162.74. And I attached our profit and loss summary. So if there's any questions based upon these that you guys have, I'm more than happy to answer, and I'm going to hopefully have a better financial cover sheet next month, but I'm working on it.
Actually, Travis, it's really very good because I use the statement and it matches.
Good, good.
Yes, are we still on schedule, or are we still on schedule with the RV site as far as completion? Has been pushed away? You mentioned it's going to open
drive first. I anticipate that the RV park will be done much sooner than that.
Yep.
Due to weather, due to additions that we've made to the project, I'm just hesitant to pick a month until I know it. I know we're getting closer. The site south of the bathroom will obviously be done first and get open. They did tell me, they gave me more information, but we'll go over the RV park update and information item B, and I'll give you guys some more updates with that.
Interesting.
Okay, other management reports.
Anything further? Question? Motion. Make a motion to accept the management reports.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Chair?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Brings us to action items, starting with action item A, resolution 2023-01, a registered agent for the board.
Yeah, so this is removing Gary Dillinger and adding myself, Travis Webster, as a registered agent with the Secretary of State.
Okay. Question? Very straightforward.
Okay.
Motion.
Motion to approve resolution 2023-01, approval of registered agent.
I second it.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Daniel?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Item B, art on the coast.
Okay, so Laura from Art on the Coast came in and is planning on putting on her event again, but she asked in an email for a price reduction, a reduction in fee for future festivals. Did you guys have a chance to read it? Yes. So I told her I'd bring it to the board. There's a lot of nonprofits out there that would like to do events, and, you know, I understand it's a cost, but my recommendation is that we keep our fee schedule to what it is, and maybe in the future we will look at, if everybody so decides, to add some sort of language in here that states one way or the other if there is a price reduction for nonprofits or if there won't be. I know we've brought these to the boards in the future, but maybe it's not a good precedent for us to set to allow this to happen, because we're going to have a lot of nonprofits, I believe, sitting at our door. Mm-hmm. So we might improve language that just says it in the event form that might prevent us from having to bring this to the board every time if we choose to do
but
that.
But on our fee schedule, we really don't have anything other than the whole boardwalk. So the art people are just using the fence area, right?
This is different.
This is not the art.
Oh, no, right. The point is the art festival that happened, and they do use the whole boardwalk.
No, if they do, then we'll have to keep it that way.
So the difference that I see is
nonprofit
or profit. The port still has expenses.
Oh, we do.
We have employee expenses for trash and all of and so the stuff that goes with that. I would be reluctant, personally, to get into a situation where we're trying to pick and choose who's going to get a break and who isn't.
We can.
I understand and I sympathize with the fact that these are nonprofits and their whatever they're making goes to somebody else. But at the same time, I think we need to make sure we don't get in a situation where the port is underwriting nonprofit activities. That's my thought.
What has the port historically done? Stuff like
that. Last year, this event was charged the normal rates.
Right.
Previously, nonprofits usually pay. I mean, unless a manager has made a specific okay for that, which I can't really recall us doing. But last year, this event was charged normal rates.
This isn't that much, but.
It was charged normal rates
last
year.
Yeah.
So historically, we have not given discounts to nonprofits?
No.
That we know of.
Yeah, that I know of.
Historically, I hate to use historically in relation to the port, because there's probably been some things that have happened historically that we don't even know about. That was kind of a wink and a promise sort of thing. And so,
one thing I remember is we had an adjustment in the fee for the car show. That was it.
Okay. Anything?
No, I'm glad you guys explained the part. I had the wrong thing. Because I was going to say, we don't really have a teacher.
So, in reading the agenda and this item, it says the recommended motion to approve. That's not what we want.
That's kind of just a catch-all for the. It's not motion to approve. It's motion to approve allowing it to happen, or motion to not allow it to approve, or just don't make no action on it. That's open-ended.
All right, any further on this one?
No.
Motion.
So I'll make a motion to retain the fees as scheduled for all, nonprofit or not.
A second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Jill?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Mountain View Motorcycle.
Okay.
gets everybody aware that the leasee at Mountain View Motorcycles left. Took all his stuff. Didn't appear at first that he gave us much notice, but maybe there is some notice now that you found.
So just to walk you through it, the letter of him vacating came to us on January 2nd, and it came to Kim's email. We weren't caught up on all of Kim's emails, so we didn't see this. So we invoiced him for that month, and then he sent us, I think what I put in here is, it was a better termination or vacating. It was all within the same couple of days. There really was no notice. We showed up to this. After James is on, right?
Yeah.
So I've been talking with James kind of back and forth about this, and James gave us some of his thoughts that were on here about with the notice that we could probably charge for an additional month of January due to the notice that it actually going into the next month. I don't see the real reason to pursue that. He owes us money to date as it is. You can see the statement that's attached to this. The building is in really bad shape now.
Was it in
bad shape when we leased it to him. I mean, it was in bad shape when we leased it to him. So
this building has no foundation. It's sitting on pilings. I almost guarantee you, if you rip the siding off, you're going to find a lot of dry rot and other issues.
Well, the siding is rotted. I know the roof needs to be redone. All the plumbing has to be redone. The plumbing that supplies that building right now is off from a submeter from our dock water that we have to always read every month and report that to Harbor Sanitary. It's kind of a disaster of a building. I know when we leased it to the motorcycle shop, he did work just to be able to get into it, and then we leased it. But in our February meeting, we'll come back and we'll discuss what the future of that building is once I get some better ideas of what it's going to take to bring it back to leasable, and we'll have to make the decision if we're going to go down that road or not. Attached with this information, like I said, he had an outstanding balance before January of $3,250. When he did move in, he did give us a security deposit of $588.50. When he vacated the building, there was 6 buckets of waste oil that was left in there, a refrigerator, one of the windows got broke and the glass was just there. So we had 3 port staff hours just in there cleaning up the rest of it and disposing of what's left. That came to $398.38. So what I've done so far is deducted that from the security deposit, and that left him with $190.14. Basically, that would go back to him. That would come off from the $3,250 that he owes. So that's my way of going.
What about all the stuff he took?
So when he first moved in there, the electrical and everything that was in there was in pretty bad shape. He asked to redo it. My guess is the panel was his, and he replaced it. Granted, the panel's gone, wiring's hanging, light fixtures are gone.
Tenant improvements typically stay with the property.
Absolutely.
Yeah, improvements are part of the property. They're no longer privately held. So that would certainly incline me to not giving back any of a security deposit, plus maybe add something to what we're going to go after.
And that's kind of what we're here to discuss and, you know, take it into consideration what the future of the building might be. I know it's kind of two different lines right there, two different discussions about what the future is and what it was left to be. You know, to put in a new, have an electrician come in, put a new panel. I currently took the meter out because it is a safety hazard with the bare wires showing in there. I'm not exactly the bill could come back to a few thousand dollars more for an electrician to come back and do that. So my question in coming back to here is how far and how
I
know what the lease says, and I know how far we can do it. Are we going to adhere to the lease and what it says in there about tenant improvements, and they got to stay and, you know, calculating all the removed electrical fixtures that aren't in there?
My thoughts are this. So I think we should try and recover some cost for that. As far as what, and I mean, we've got a wall we're going to have to fix. He cut a hole in the wall and put a door in there and then took the door. So I think we should try and recover that. As far as where we're headed from here, that's going to be a decision we'd have to make, looking at what it would, just estimate what it would cost to make that building whole, and weigh that against whether it's worth it in the long run to do that. I mean, we can do a lot of cosmetic improvements. We can replace the electric. We can do all that stuff, but we're still sitting with a building that has issues. You know, and if we were to choose to replace the roof and the siding and all that stuff, we still have no foundation under it. So, you know, without even knowing the cost, just right off the top of the head, my inclination would be to take the building down and then look to replace it sometime in the future when we can, with maybe more than one of those boxes. I mean, we had talked at one time about taking that out and putting an office complex in there with four or five offices. That gets us, that puts us in debt to do that, but it also gets us a building that's up to code, that's modern, that's, you know, built for the conditions we have here. But as far as his situation right now, he owes us $3,250. We can keep the security deposit, and can we then add to that the cost of fixing the wall if nothing else?
Well, I think the fixing the wall and putting the, having an electrician put the electrical panel back in.
Well, at this point, we'd probably find out what that would cost and not actually do it until we make a determination about the building.
Does anybody know where Al is now?
Right. Who are you going to send it to?
Heard me?
I heard he was going back to Montana. Mm-hmm.
Well, we would turn this over to collections, correct? So
that's, we have processes. Yeah,
collection agency will then begin the process of trying to find him.
Well, my suggestion would be, if we're turning it over to collections, which it looks like that's what we're going to have to do, then we add the January rent to it also.
Yep.
And if he pays it ASAP, we'll deduct the January rent. That might be an incentive.
Yeah, he noticed us late January, so we couldn't have rented it. Not that we probably would have, but still, he broke that part of the lease. So that he owes us that, as far as I'm concerned, and $3,250, and it's going to go to collection and just go after.
Well, but it sounds like we're on two different pathways here, because if we're going to offer him an incentive, then we don't do that with collections. We do that with a letter of demand that says, we're going to ask you to pay this amount, pay the amount for January, pay for the replacement of the wall and the replacement of the panel. And if you do that promptly, we'll waive the January rent.
Okay.
not what you said, basically?
I personally, I agree with you that we're going to tear the building down. I don't think that building is worth spending the amount of money that would require. So I'd just kiss the door and the electrical and all that stuff off. If he pays us the $3,200 and we ended up with January rent too, we're coming out way ahead of, well, there's no point in charging him and creating an issue and him wanting to pay when if we can get the $3,200, I think I would personally be happy with that. And then to turn around and charge him for that and then tear the building down would be, doesn't make any sense to me.
I got a suggestion. No deposit back due to damages and cleanup. We add January rent because we got notified after January, you know, after the date. I had to then go back in there with our guys and clean up and get the things back to zero. So January's rent with no deposit back and terminate the lease as of January 31st.
And then turning it over to collections.
Then we would send him a deposit.
Well, then I will send, then we would send a final state, a final bill to him, and then that would end up running through probably our process of 30, 60, 90 days, and then we'd send him to collections.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
That's how I believe it would work with the way our policies work with payments and receivables.
It does.
That sounds reasonable to me.
Yes.
Okay. Anything further?
No.
No. Okay. Who wants to speak? I will make a motion if you don't mind. So I move that we bill him for the $3,250 he owes us plus the January rent. Notify him we're not returning any of the security deposits and terminate his lease on January 31st.
I'll second that.
1 second before that. James? Does that sound in line?
It does. That approach works fine.
Thank you.
Okay. And then, well, I guess we'll see what we do after.
The next meeting, I'm going to try and get some rough cost estimates of what needs to be fixed, about how much it would cost. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but it'll at least give us a number to look at and see if it's even a path we want to go down.
Okay. All right. Any further? We have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. That brings us to the additional item B, which is McLennan excavation payment request number 5.
Yeah, so this is a progress payment number 5 for work performed through December 1st, 2022 through January 6th, 2023. And it's in the amount of $132,159.52.
Was this, that dollar figure, was that scheduled or is that just kind of accumulated?
It's accumulated upon their payroll schedules, time that they've worked, and any material that have gone into where they're currently at right now. Like our last one was $39, and that was for materials and services performed. So the payment request that they're asking is in conjunction with the work that they're doing and having to put out.
Okay.
They don't have any employees.
We'll talk about it in the RV park update.
Okay. Anyone want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve progress payment number 5 to McLennan Excavation progress, $132,159.52 for work performed December 1 to January 6th, 2023.
I second it. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Anything further? Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Now, I have a question on this, not on McLennan, but are we going to get another separate bill or increased in the bill from Clay and Associates for their work on the $11,000 that we did this last? That was not part of the contract originally, apparently.
No, that ProClay is not going to be charged us for that. That's Coos Curry that has came in to our project and has decided that these upgrades happen, and we've worked directly with Coos Curry on any upgrades for their stuff.
Okay, that brings us to informational items, 2023 event.
So this was just giving everyone an opportunity to see what the events we do have coming up that have been booked. The only one we don't have in here is the five-year contract one that we have with Art at the Port, which I'm assuming is still happening and going on. So that's additional to this. So just information items of what's already came in for 2023 events.
So at one time we had talked about sitting down with Bruce Ellis in particular to talk about the Pirate Festival.
Yes.
In terms of managing that a little better.
Yes, we did talk about that. I will reach out to him and see when he has an available time to come in and talk with us, and so we can put our concerns out there and give them a chance to respond to it.
Okay. Are there any other vendors besides Bruxelles that we need to talk to about their events?
So one thing that even when Gary was here and we went through all last summer with the event is the art that's on the hand that's up there that we have for there. And when these events happen, and the walkway has always came into an issue, either with the event coordinator or with the art that's there. So we need to relook at what the expectation is going to be and make it clear of what it's going to be to not only for the event coordinators, but for me and for you guys, so we know exactly what we want to happen there. I would like that conversation to happen when Bruce is here, being that he holds mostly events where he can give us his reasonable thought on what he thinks he can do. So why don't we see our next meeting if he can come for an information type item discussion, and we can talk about it in our February. That sound okay?
I did note a Flyman Salmon.
There is, it is July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, I think, is when they're attempting to have it. So
grateful to see that rather than the ones that were crossed out, because I can tell you right now there will not be a September salmon season here. I'm relatively optimistic. July 1st, 2nd, 3rd is the best time to do it, assuming that we're going to have anything. And right at this point, I have absolutely no idea whether we're going to have a salmon season or not. So I guess if we don't have one, you could either have the event and not have a contest with it or just cancel.
I think those will be your options, their options. So. Like you said, we're just going to have to see what the season's come out to be and see how it plays out. One thing with that happening on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, I believe, and then the 4th of July,
yeah,
it's going to be a very busy beginning of the month. There'll be a lot of people here and a lot going on. So, yeah, that'll be a lot happening here.
And if we do have the salmon season and they run this event, then we're going to have a lot of extra boat trailers and stuff to be able to.
It will be in, you know, just remember that when we have these big of events and good fishing, our port's not built big enough for it.
Plus the 4th of July.
Plus the 4th of July. I mean, you have many, many things that are going to cause a lot of congestion, probably a lot of irritable people out there. So that's just the life of what we have during nice days, good weather events, and good fishing.
Yes, because the next day he has the sky high 4th of July.
And that's something that's happening out, I mean, the 4th of July that's happening out here, which is separate from the actual 4th of July fireworks show that we'll
right.
be having at the RV park.
Yes.
So one thing that occurs to me when we're talking 4th of July event is both the 3rd and the 4th are fires on the beach. We've got a lot more driftwood this year than we've had in the past. And it hasn't, I mean, well, the catch fire is not really a safety issue as much as it is just a huge smoke problem.
Mm-hmm.
It just hangs over the RV park down here in the basin. And so
I will say Harbor Fire, as of lately, has done a pretty good job of monitoring that, doing drive-throughs, and they're very eager to get down there and put out any fires that are down there. So I think if we stay in contact with them and, you know, when those things happen, call them, and they'd be more than happy to come down and help us.
Okay. All right, anything else on that? Move to the RV park update.
Okay, so the RV park update, we had Crow Clay was out here. Tim with Crow Clay was out here Friday, kind of confirmed the site layout to make sure that the angles, the width, and the concrete slab height is verified and correct. He did do that. Some of the things that we talked about, obviously, was weather and construction schedules. I expressed our urgency to get this done. I understand weather, and I understand things are getting hard, but I did kind of up my ass with them and said, when you guys have available days, I want to see more people, more things happening out here. So the last update that I got is their plans. They have 8 or 9 spots formed up, I think, already out there. They are planning to pour those hopefully tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday. So, you know, I said I understand the weather, but when we have good days, we need to get it moving. So other than that, I left it at that. They are working on another construction schedule that's not this one that might allow a little more for rain delays and not so put on every day that I'm out there working. So as they get that to us, and when I get that, I'll be more than happy to send that out, or I'll have it in the office for anybody that wants to see it.
Any idea of the completion date? I mean, I know there's lots of variables. Where are they seeing anything?
We both kind of, when we were standing there talking, we didn't come down to any dates, but I said when spring break comes, when March hits, spring break comes, we're going to want this open. So make it happen. And as we keep continuing on where they're at right now, south of the bathroom, those first 22 sites have the most work. There's the most stuff in the way. There's a lot going on in that, and they're starting to move up. So I anticipate that the first 11 sites or so, probably somewhere end of this month, the first of next month, and then, you know, February, middle of February, hopefully up to the bathroom. And then the next sites, once you go north of the bathroom, are just electrical and water upgrades. so they're not tearing apart sites, they're not tearing apart these. So that should go relatively quick, and then the last thing to be done will be the six additional sites down there at the end. So as it gets closer to spring break, more and more sites will start becoming open. So like I told them, my first, typically right now we're not full anyways, but I said if we can get these first sites open, it'll at least be able to take care of the people that wouldn't normally be here. So I would like to say by March, middle of March, I'm hoping they're done.
Okay. All right, anything on that else? Okay, move to the 2022 commission meeting summary.
So we just kind of quickly put this together. It's always kind of nice to see what the year brought. The papers behind it are just backup of what the meetings were and what the items were, but the punch list of it is 29 total meetings, 112 action items, 2 failed, 6 tabled, and 1 no action, and 106 information items. So it's quite a few meetings, quite a few action items, a lot of information. Any questions on 2022?
I don't have any questions. I have a comment. I like this.
Yeah.
I think a file with all of those in there is going to benefit the heck out of somebody 10 years from now or 15 years from now when they want to know, well, how did we do this? I can go back and say, well, I can scan that quickly and find a meeting date and then go from there. I think that's it.
Yep, each one of these will go in the beginning of each year and make quick reference to new meetings.
I mean, we have had that question on this board block. When on earth did all this start? Or how did this happen? And now we've at least got a reference. So.
Yeah.
Okay, Gordon.
So December, we've had a lot of weather. The county has declared local emergency for December 9th and 10th and 25th and 26th. Yeah, 9th, 10th, 25th, and 26th. The county commissioners approved this declaration, and this is going to be sent to the governor's desk for a state declaration. Currently, right now, they are, and I have it, we're putting together cost estimates for damage and debris removal that happened during these storms. And then if we get state declaration, then we will maybe be able to see what funding is available for us to make these repairs. All the log debris, everything that washed up on the, you know, at the RV park, we had to clear, 5R Construction was out here clearing. Those are all costs associated with storms that we'll be turning in, along with banks. The west side banks are continuing to fall in. There's more by our boat shop, the transit dock over here by the launch ramp, and by A dock. We're seeing multiple different areas of the banks sloughing in. So if we do get this, this funding could and will be in addition to our current funding that we have for hazard mitigation and already fixing that with FEMA.
Would you include the broken dock in that?
I'm still working through how if I can tie those together. My major question, and I kind of got my answer, is that when the storms are declared, at what point, how far past those storms and those damages can you actually still claim on? And do king tide, does tidal influence have a factor in storm damage? Which is what I'm gathering is yes, it does. You just,
well, my God.
It's just careful. You have to lay out the chain of events and how it happened. The storm came, rain came, saturation, high winds coupled with high storm surge, puts additional stress on the banks, and we can prove that the banks haven't fallen in at the previous king tides we have, so it does tie that to a storm related.
I think one of the big influences we have here is river flow. Because you put 20,000 CFS in that river and then put a big tide on it, you've got an awful lot of water you're dealing with. So I think that might be a piece of information. I don't know if that site's archival or not. USGS Rivergate site, is that, I think you can go back and look in it.
Yeah, I think you can get history.
So you might be able to find river flows too with that.
And is what I'm currently doing is I'll put together a estimate of a damage assessment and put it in there. And if we get the declaration and that comes, that's when we'll have to do more explanation and tying those together. Right now, kind of coming up with a plan and trying to decide. I mean, all of December was a storm, mostly. So trying to take our pictures and divvy them up between this storm and the other storm and how they, that's what we're going to kind of separate the two. We'll turn it in and we'll just have to see what happens. Now, the other side of that is that if something isn't declared, these storm damages, these cleanups, the damages we incur, they're our cost.
Right.
So our banks are estimated at $800 to $1,000 per foot of bank when it has it to repair. The log debris and things that we've done, it's not huge dollar amounts, but it's a lot of time, a lot of labor that goes into it. The banks are expensive. The banks are a big one, but the log debris and stuff, ultimately the port, we might be eating that cost if nothing is declared with it.
Like the boardwalk.
Well, the boardwalk is another thing that is on our hazard mitigation program. I've been
moving for a number of years.
It has been moving for a number of years, and because it has been and where it sits, it might not be exactly in our favor, but we're just going to have to see what options come up of it. And it is currently moving. It's moved since March. March was the first picture that I have up on there to now. It's moved 2 inches. So it went from 9, it's continuing to move.
Does it seem to move more during these rain and weather events?
The only time it moves is during weather.
There you go.
Okay. Anything else on storms? That puts us to item E, the Stacy update.
Okay. So as of now, we asked for the survey. They asked for an extension saying that it would be completed the third or the fourth. When the fourth came, we made a phone call to Rick, and he stated he sold the boat. So currently right now, I have talked to the new owner. His intentions are, as soon as the weather is good enough, he's taking it and leaving. He's also taking the gear, the hopper, the doors, the outriggers. There's some other miscellaneous gear, and that's supposed to go with it. If this new owner has it done, gone out of here at the next available window, we'll be done with the Miss Daisy. If he doesn't do that, well, then he's going to be on a month-to-month mortgage agreement, and at least we'll have a new owner to deal with. But as of right now, the crab pots have been sold, the liens have been removed, and the boat's been sold to new people. So once that boat is done and gone, I plan on rearranging some boats out there and getting, first and foremost, the Miss Emily off our transit docks. So that's one of the benefits that are coming from this, is we're going to move around some boats and get our transit docks at least 80 feet of it cleared and not have a permanent boat on it. So that's the plan with this spot, and hopefully, last time we have to talk about the mistake.
I'll reserve judgment. Okay, the item I put on is about the Indian Memorial, and we got a letter from the Confederated Tribes of the Celeste Indians stating that currently the maintenance of the Indian Memorial is being done by a local group, the Chitco Indian Memorial Project Board, which is comprised of local citizens. They're asking for the Celeste Tribal Council to take over maintenance. And so they're just looking for feedback from us that that's okay. So, and I can think of no reason to not do that. Okay. Anything further before we go to executive session?
I have a question for Travis.
Mm-hmm.
In regard to the assembly and this electrical leak, do we measure how much electrical is going into the water? People can die every year. I'm just curious how, where that line.
So the legal, I had Gary Burton down here. He's the one that helped go through with me with some of the boats and trying to get a better understanding of how the electrolysis in the water works. It's like 0.035 or 32 milliamps is what's legally allowed for it to go back into the water. Some boats, yeah, that's how people die, is you'll get many amps going back into the water. And those are the things that, as we discussed before, we don't have really great policy or procedure on it, and I'm trying to learn how to exactly test for it and have some knowledge behind it. And then the next thing we're going to have to decide is what to do with those boats and what limits and set a policy for this. There is other ports that have policies for it. It's just one thing I really want to take a close look at it, how we do it, how we word it, and what we're going to expect of our customers to make those repairs.
It's been a long time, but I know there's, I can't remember if it was through the Coast Guard or another organization, but it seems to me that if we've identified we have electrical issues with a boat being transmitted in the water, we need to unplug them. You know, but I don't know what the standard is, so as far as how much you can have versus a shock versus kill somebody.
I don't know where that limit lands, and I am actively looking at how we're going to deal with electrolysis and amps being put back in the water. When he was here, the Miss Stacy, the Haida, and the CJ all were putting 1 to 3 amps back in the water. I know the Haida's taking care of his, and the CJ is taking care of his.
What did they do?
Isolation transformer, I think is what it is.
I got those on my boat.
That's what they're supposed to have, and I mean, they're like $1,000, and then you got to have them installed and put in, but that is what I've been told, that a lot of the bigger boats.
Well, what happens if you still have a battery charger on? See, that's going directly to the battery, from the battery to the ground, and everything's, that's a totally different situation.
Like I said, I'm trying to understand it a little bit better, but I know all of our pedestals are grounded together, mm-hmm. which means that if there's a deficiency in one boat, they're grounded together, which will start letting other boats use other people's zincs, or it will show that they're hot by sharing the ground is what I've understood. So, like I said, I'm working on trying to figure out how to deal with that, but electrolysis is an issue. I just got to figure out how we're going to tackle that problem.
Something's really hot over on my dock. It
needs
my zinc quick.
It'll
last long.
And like I said, I think it's with the way I've understood it, that having all of our pedestals grounded together like that and both sitting next to each other, they will use other people's zincs and a lot of them too without hauling out or seeing what the bottom of all these boats look like. I mean, you can't really necessarily put some in the water. You have to physically go up to each boat with their shore power cord, and what Gary was doing is it's something that wraps around it that reads the amperage, and if it keeps moving and it's not steady, it means that it's escaping the boat and it's continually putting power through it. So
okay.
We don't have a lot of swimmers in the water, which is a benefit for us, but I'm glad you're looking into
it. Electrolysis, and it can be a very big safety problem.
You know, it has environmental impacts as well. Small, but certainly can affect marine life. Most likely just dispel it or move it.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
well,
anything else?
Sometimes you can get seal control.
What's that?
You can get control of the seals by using this red.
No. We need some grades in about 220.
You're almost there.
Okay, well, that then we will adjourn out of our regular meeting. And
goodbye.
Now go to an executive session.